This is the Talk of Fame Network on SB Nation Radio from the O'Reilly Auto Parts Studios. Here's Clark Judge, Rick Goslin, and Ron Borges.
Well, our next guest was one of the best pure pass rushers of his era, and that's Mr. Robert Mathis, who had 123 career sacks in his 13 seasons with the Indy Colts, including 19 and a half when he led the league in 2013 and went to 5 Pro Bowls and 10 more sacks in 2006 when the Colts won the Super Bowl, which isn't too bad for a player who wasn't invited to the NFL Combine, became a modest 5th-round draft pick, and didn't even start for the Colts until his 3rd season. Robert retired after the 2016 season and will become eligible for the Hall of Fame in 2022, and today he's with us. Robert, thanks for joining us.
I really appreciate you guys having me. Quite an honor.
You got it. Well, it's an honor to have you on here. In your first or final season, I guess, at Alabama A&M, I'm going to go way back there. I'm going to start at Alabama A&M. You set an NCAA Division I AA record. Do you know what it was? 20 sacks, 10 forced fumbles. You're named the SWAC Defensive Player of the Year. So, question, how does a player with that kind of college productivity slip through the cracks of NFL scouting?
Well, I like to think that my brother Freddie and I were one of the first, I guess, undersized speed guys in the NFL era, you know, under the 6 foot, under 265 pound type hybrid guys to play defensive end. So, needless to say, I wasn't on a lot of people's radar.
Yeah. You're on a lot of people's quarterbacks after you got to the league. I know that.
That's right.
You know, my favorite pastime, second quarterbacks.
the NFL wants its defensive ends, as you point out, to be those sort of prototypes, you know, 6'4 and 265 pounds and long arms. And the fact that you didn't fit that clearly bothered some teams. But I know some projected you as an outside linebacker because of your size. But there are always exceptions to the rule, and you are one of those exceptions. What made you an exception that allowed you to excel despite the fact you didn't have the kind of classic pass rusher's body they were looking for?
It was always funny because I heard that exception word just all throughout my career, and I never really understood what it meant. But I take it as a compliment, you know, in hindsight, because you know it means you defied a lot of assumptions and defy the odds. But as for me, it was just pure. Just give me a shot. Look at the film and judge it from what I can do, not from what I look like. And the Colts were the only team of the 32 that actually wanted me to play defensive end, put my hand in the ground and go rush the quarterback. Everybody else, it was linebacker, and which I had no clue on how to do that.
Well, let's go to those Colts, Robert. You went from exceptions to exceptional with Indianapolis. You spent your first 3 seasons coming off the bench, as you remember, as a pass rush specialist, and you set a franchise record in just your second year with sacks in 6 consecutive games, and you had 10 and a half on the season. I'm looking at the stat sheet. It says you followed that up with 11 and a half in 2005, all off the bench. It seems like, as Ron mentioned, the Colts seemed to find a role that best fit a player of your size. Was there a yearning during those 3 seasons to become a starter? I mean, did you want to become a starter, or were you content to be the designated pass rusher?
Oh, under no circumstance was I complacent or content with being a backup guy, because I felt I could work hard and eventually earn my spot in the starting role. But we had Raheem Brock, our left end, and he was doing a hell of a job. And it was just about just doing my job, and I used the analogy earning my seat at the table. And we had my brother, he was in my wedding, Dwight Freeney. He was bringing havoc off the right side, and it was just I had to earn my stripes just to be in the same room, you know, with respect wise as he was. So I just had to work. I core special teams guy, and I took my maybe 10 to 15 third down reps during the game, but it was just I had to earn it, you know.
Now, it seemed to me that you were fortunate in that, you know, Tony Dungy was a great believer in speed over size on defense. You had Gary Brackett and Bob Sanderson, yourself and Freeney. None of you really fit the prototypes for those positions. How did he impact your career as the head coach of the Colts?
I felt I was supposed to be here, you know, divine intervention, if you will, because the lessons that he taught me as a man, first, that I use this in teaching my sons, my wife, my family, just just be a man and be a leader, and then everything's kind of trickled down, the whole domino effect with faith, family, football, you know, in that exact order. It was priorities, and he just treated men like men, and if you didn't get the job done, he was just honest enough without yelling to tell you, you're killing us, the famous Gandhi words. But he was very instrumental in my life and my career.
Well, your career overlapped, Freeney, of course, the other great edge rusher on those teams. But, you know, he came in as a first-round pick. He went to 7 Pro Bowls. He had all those sort of advantages of being a number one pick. Now, you played together for 10 seasons, and in 4 of them, you both had double-figure sacks. And I think it was in 04 the two of you combined for 27 sacks. So how do you feel that you fed off Freeney and Freeney fed off you?
We kind of joke around a lot, and we say we stole sacks from each other, because I truly believe Dwight would be nipping at Bruce Smith's sack record of 200 if I wasn't stealing a few, and I'd probably be up there around, you know, with the straight hands 140 something if he didn't steal mine. But it was all good. I had to take pressure off him. He was getting a lot of extra eyes, extra hands, and just attention on him, and it was my job to. I had to beat those one-on-ones. And if I was getting chipped or, you know, things of that nature, he had to win, and which he did. And so I felt like we kind of redefined blocking schemes, you know, as a duo. And he brought this up at his retirement speech that in the AFC South, they started just double-chipping with max protection, eight guys blocking. And so it was just we had it was an expectation, man, that you had to get to the quarterback, beat the one-on-ones, and I'm watching him as I rush. He'd do a spin move, make O-line fall to the ground, but at the same time, I had to race him to the quarterback. So it was a lot of fun, man. I was his biggest cheerleader, and he was mine. It was never any jealousy. It was just all fun, great memories.
Why did that work out that way for you two guys? Because let's be honest about this. Been other teams with similar sort of situations where there was a lot of jealousy and it didn't work out as well as it should have. Why did it work with you two guys?
Like it goes right back to Coach Dungy, and really just, I mean, from the top down, Mr. Irsay, he did a great job of putting his vision into motion, which was he wanted a leader of men, which is Mr. Polian, Bill Polian, a Hall of Fame GM, and he sought Coach Dungy, Hall of Fame head coach. Coach Dungy had a vision, and they had Peyton, a surefire First Valley Hall of Fame quarterback to the receiver. I mean, just the way this team was built, it was built around genuine, just authentic guys that wanted to win. Good guys that love football and that wanted to win. That was the main ingredient, just work, just family, and just getting after it, man. And it was done the right way.
Hey, Robert, earlier I mentioned that you set an NCAA Division I AA record with those 10 forced fumbles, which you did as a senior in college. But you also set the NFL career mark with 52 forced fumbles.
Wow.
How did you learn and then master the art of the strip sack?
Honestly, it was my idol growing up. You know, even in high school, before I even started playing football, I always wanted to play, but I didn't start playing till the 10th grade. And Derek Thomas really just, for some reason, he stood out to me. And I used to watch him growing up, and he did this tomahawk chop. Every time he came with the Chiefs with the, I don't know, I guess they called it a tomahawk chop, but he did it every time he tackled a quarterback. And I just noticed the ball was just bouncing on the ground every time he body slammed the quarterback. And so I just started mimicking him. So, like, since high school, I just always did that, just kind of just secure the sack and then bring my right hand and just try to get the ball, tomahawk the ball from the quarterback. And that was, became habit, actually. And so I would say college, they just refined it. And then I got to the pro leagues, and John Tierling, man, he perfected it. He demanded that you just plan your work your plan, and this, everything became no history.
I want to jump ahead to the sort of the end of your career, because I remember in 2014 you missed that season with a ruptured Achilles, but you returned to play two more years before he retired as a Colt following the 2016 season. In an era of salary caps and free agency, it's really rare to see somebody play 13 seasons with one team. How important was it for you to spend your entire career with the Colts?
I'm forever indebted to the city, the organization, for allowing me to stay in one spot, raising my family, my, you know, I have five children, you know, wife and children. We're just to stay centralized in this, you know, city of Indianapolis. And it was just, first off, I had to earn my keep. And second of all, it was just the team believing in me enough to take that leap of faith on me. And I just didn't want to disappoint anybody, especially my family, and which my name and the team, which is the horseshoe. It was just all about just holding my own and just working and just appreciating the opportunity I was given.
Well, you're now a defensive coaching assistant with the Colts, pass rush consultant, naturally enough. So you certainly understand how the rules have changed the game. You do the tomahawk chop now, and you know, you're surrounded by 15 policemen. They take you out in hand.
Right.
So you can't teach them the tomahawk chop even if you want to, I guess.
That's probably the perfect analogy for that.
Yeah. How hard is it to coach these young guys now who want to achieve the same things you did, but really they're, and I don't mean it as a pun, but their hands are tied compared to how you could play. How do you go about coaching them today when you realize the game is different?
Well, I realize in the coaching world, probably one of the worst things that you can say to a player that you're coaching is, "I don't know." And when they ask me, "Well, what are we supposed to do? How are we supposed to tackle and approach, tackle and finish?" And I literally had to say, "I don't know. Let me find out." And I'm still trying to find this answer. It's pretty tough, but I mean, the rules are the rules, and you just have to work within the rules of the game. But it's definitely different, very, very different. And I know all the football gods, namely Deacon Jones, and these types of guys are kind of rolling in their graves right now. But
sure.
You know, just the brotherhood of pass of quarterback haters is just not good right now.
Right. Yeah.
So
right.
You know, just
explain one thing to me as both a guy who sacked a gazillion quarterbacks and now you're coaching guys. Explain to me how I'm supposed to tackle a guy head on and not fall on top of him when we fall down.
Very true, because I don't know. Because
yeah, it's absurd.
Now, you know, in today's NFL, most quarterbacks are bigger than pass rushers, edge guys.
Mm-hmm.
How can I tackle Cam Newton, Ben Roethlisberger? These guys are 6'5", 265 pounds. I was 6 feet, 240 pounds. I have to get this guy down the best way I know how. And so if you go in there and you have to think about how I need to tackle this guy when they have a strike zone and five bodyguards and two referees, it's pretty tough. So I really feel like true pass rushers, has become the number one occupation in the NFL. I really stand behind that.
Hey, Robert, thanks so much for the time, and best of luck going forward with your Hall of Fame candidacy and also figuring out those defensive rules. When you figure them out, give us a call, would you please?
I will, and I just want to add that sack fumbles are still not an official stat. I just kind of want to throw that out there.
Okay. We'll make it one. We're all in that room, so when your name comes up, I say, "Hey, wait a minute, let me tell you about this guy."
Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks,
you
Robert.
Got it, Robert. Thank you.
All right.
That was former Indianapolis pass rusher Robert Mathis. Up next, 2-Minute Drill. You're listening to the Talk of Fame Network.